Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
South African DJ Abby Neurock embarked on a journey in 2002 when she acquired her beloved Technics SL1210 turntables, which have remained her faithful companions ever since. As one of the few female vinyl DJs, Abby has cultivated a devoted following over the years and gained recognition for her various club and radio residencies, as well as multiple festival performances across the globe, and has had the opportunity to share the stage with many esteemed local and international artists. Abby has carved out a distinct brand and reputation under the hashtag Strictly Vinyl, which is fueled by her unwavering passion for discovering exceptional music. Her signature sound has the ability to transcend genres, allowing her to captivate any audience that comes her way. What sets Abby apart from the rest is her unfiltered and genuine approach to DJing, making her a unique artist in the industry. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Abby Neurock. Where do we find you in the world, and how are you doing?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. You can find me at present in Johannesburg in South Africa. I live in Johannesburg, but I'm often between Cape Town and Joburg, so I have family splits in both, and I play a lot along the coast, so yeah, catch me if you can.
Okay, so now let's rewind. At what age did you think to yourself, cool, I want to be in the entertainment or the music sort of world, and how did that journey progress to where we are today?
So my mom is a classical guitarist, so I was brought up with her kind of playing the soundtrack to my days and listening to her practice. I was always surrounded by music. My brother and sister's father, so the predecessor to my father, used to own a chain of record stores called Look and Listen. And I was kind of always brought up on records and on vinyl. Yeah. And I was surrounded by music and by musicians. And I often went to jazz clubs. So I always knew I wanted to be somehow in the music world. I started, I played piano as a kid, as I'm sure most people do, in the recorder. I think that's kind of like a predecessor to most instruments. Yeah. I started collecting vinyl, which I always had a fascination for, and I continued. I learned how to play officially through the DJ Mix Club in 2002. And yeah, here we are.
You did play recorder, piano. Did you ever carry on with those instruments, or did you?
I wish I had.
Okay.
Looking back now, I wish I had, but I think there was that like forcing of having to practice as a kid, you know. Oh. You can't tell a child what to do. So I rebelled and I was like, I'm not going to go to music anymore, which I really do regret. I think it would have stood me in good stead now.
Do you create your own original music, or you only play music by other artists, or both?
So I've always kind of been more of a music selector because I am a vinyl collector. So the majority of my DJ career, I've played vinyl and I've collected vinyl. More recently, I started to produce. I had some engineers who helped me, again, for the hands part of my ideas. So yes, I am producing, but the majority of my life has been collecting music. And I mean, there's just so much out there. I've got a very eclectic kind of genre preference, so to ask me what I love the most is a difficult question. But yeah, I amalgamate the two.
This journey of now producing your own music, when did that start? And was there a bit of resistance in going down that path?
Like I said, again, I wish that I had started to produce when I started to DJ.
Yeah.
Because it's like trying to learn how to ride a bicycle from the very beginning. And I'm a perfectionist, and I know how incredible music is that has been produced well. So for me, trying my hand at Ableton over the last few years, I mean, I can do it and I've created songs, but it's never been good enough for me to say, okay, I'm ready to release this onto something. So going back to, I wish I continued my music knowledge. I can read and write music, but I wish that I had it as an ongoing thing. So now I've got the ideas, I've got the know-how, I've got the music understanding, but now I need the people who engineer it. So I'm in the process of doing that. But yeah, I wish I did it sooner, but I suppose it's never too late to start.
Exactly. And also the thing is that we've got these experiences of our lives, that things are supposed to happen when they're meant to happen. So the fact that there might have been a little bit of procrastination before, but now you're going, cool, let's do it. It will just happen and flow from there.
For sure. And, you know, I think my biggest goal is to be able to make a living overseas and DJ overseas. I've played a few places before, but I think the key to be able to sustain yourself and not just be a music selector is to produce your own music and release your own music and hopefully have a record label sign you up. But yeah, I'm on this discovery now and let's see how it goes.
Let's say not hopefully, let's say when they sign you up.
Okay, when they sign me up, yes. When you see my face on a billboard in Ibiza, then I'll call you.
And then collaborating with David Guetta and Martin Garrix and Kygo and all of these. There's Abby with them. I love it. Okay, so now, am I correct in understanding that being a DJ, you have to be able to read the audience extremely well, understand the energy of the room, and has that always been something easy for you to pick up, or is it something that's been learnt and perfected over time?
I think that's something I can say I'm good at. I'm very empathetic, so feeling that somebody isn't enjoying something I'm playing, it kind of hits me hard, so I know how to kind of navigate around that. You know, obviously you've got to create your own identity as a DJ, and you've got to be able to say, this is my sound, but you educate people to know what it is that you want to kind of gear towards. But of course, you've got to listen to what the crowd wants. Of course, you've got to pick up where they are enjoying a track, or they're singing along, or they're vibing with your vibe. Otherwise, it feels like a public crucifixion. I think as you establish yourself as a DJ, you've got to start somewhere by reading the audience and kind of pandering to what they need, and then eventually creating your own identity where people trust you. They trust the journey that you're going to take them on. They trust new music that you may introduce to them. So I think that's the goal of every DJ. Also, I mean, producers and DJs are different. You can have a DJ that plays for events and have to cater to the masses, and you have to kind of curtail what you want to play. And then you have festivals where people will come just to listen to what you have to play. So it's all depending on your audience and your event.
Which one do you prefer?
The latter. Festivals, okay. For sure.
Okay. But now, you mentioned a little while ago that if someone's not enjoying it and you're picking that up energetically, that it hits you hard. Is that so? Yes, you feel like, oh, okay, they're not enjoying it. Do you hold on to that thought and that potential negativity, if you want to call it an inverted commas, or do you just say, okay, cool, that's that one person, and you just let it flow off your shoulders?
In theory, I let it go, but I don't. I lie awake at night going, oh my God, I screwed up.
Just from that one person.
I take what I do so seriously, and I'm so passionate about it. You know, of course you can't make everyone happy, and of course you're going to pick up on the negative vibes, but that's my consistent journey, my consistent lesson to try and get over those things. Because I've had some disastrous gigs where it will keep me awake at night, and I'll kind of go over the sequence in my head, and I'm like, why did I do that? Or why did they hate me? Or what do I? But at the end of the day, it's also, they've got their own personal stuff going on. I've got my own stuff going on. That's my lesson that I'm continuously learning. So I'll let you know in a couple of years.
So thank you. For me, it's like, also, you've given me a reinforcement, because I'm also that person. So whether it's with the interviews, or I also teach spinning classes, and if there's that one person who doesn't like it, then it's like, oh, okay, it's all about me and I'm doing a terrible job. In the meantime, my class is always full. But So preparation for event compared to preparation for festival, is it the same preparation, or is it different? And if so, how?
I play vinyl, so I try and keep it as close to being having integrity that I play off a track, the sound card, which is time coded vinyl, which means for a corporate event or an event where I'm playing to a whole, you know, diverse crowd, it gives me the opportunity to have much more music digitally that I can then burn onto my blank time coded vinyl. So it is still vinyl, but I will do that for that kind of event. Whereas festivals, I'll take hours and days and painstaking agony to loosely put together an idea of a set that I'm going to play. Again, you never really know what people are going to feel or what they're going to kind of resonate towards. So I'll pack, let's say if a set's an hour, I'll pack 2 hours worth of vinyl, so 2 heavy suitcases, or I always pack kind of slightly different to the variation in case to kind of veer towards that if in case of emergency break last. But yeah, I definitely put in more effort in selecting music for festivals.
So for the listeners, I met Abby at the Corona Sunsets last year, where Goldfish was performing and a whole bunch of other artists. And I met Abby backstage, and I can attest these big bags that she's referencing with all these vinyls. I saw, what is this person doing carrying all this stuff? And then I realized. So,
putting my back out.
I love me a CD. I still budget my CDs every month. I love the aesthetic of holding something. It's a journey and an experience to discover what I'm going to purchase that month. The opening of it, the looking at the images, the pictures, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not sure if you're aware. I'm sure you are aware, but vinyls, cassettes and CDs are making a massive comeback. Vinyls alone in the UK last year, 5.9 million copies. CDs again on a trajectory to increase, not decrease and so forth. And we've got these digital platforms that people experience or listen to music on. What's your observation of each?
Look, I mean, I understand the ease of use, the kind of more lucrative, hassle-free way to go is digital. I will always be a vinyl collector, so I go the vinyl route. I agree with you that I love the tactile kind of holistic experience of receiving a vinyl or a CD, the unwrapping, the smelling, the feeling, the touching, the listening. I'm terrible when it comes to anything kind of technology related. So if something happens with my computer, I panic and I'm like, I don't know. I can't figure out. I can't troubleshoot what the problem is. A vinyl, it's scratched or warped or there's dust on it or, you know, so I think, I'm super happy about the comeback of kind of the old school methodology. I've actually recently a sideline business. I've started a vinyl label called Stump Records, which we're trying to encourage people to press their music onto vinyl. So we've got offerings of small batch pressings. We're doing vinyl distribution. So we're bringing in, we kind of like the middleman between international record labels and local stores. So, I mean, I wholeheartedly believe in it, clearly because I've backed something that's completely vinyl related.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, also it is a very niche market, but I feel like more people are trying to stay away from main market commercialism and want to create their own identity by doing something that's kind of off the beaten track. So also how cool to have a track that you've made onto something physical that you can sign as a one of and
yes,
keep it as a keepsake.
Totally. And also what's interesting is that I've spoken to a lot of artists and through a bunch of research, it's actually the young, the teenagers and the late teens and early 20s that are going back to the physical. It's not like, oh, there's nostalgia of the older people. It's actually the younger people, which is super
true.
Cool.
You know, I think that has a direct correlation with the fact that everything is so ephemeral now. Everything's just like, you know, 5 seconds, you've got my attention span and then I'm going to swipe or scroll. And there's that lack of like, of consistency and something that's kind of grounding and, you know, I can't put into it, but you know what I'm saying? I think people are craving some kind of stability.
Yeah. And what is your observation on social media?
Look, I think it's a necessary tool. For example, my Instagram account, I have to actively post as much as it sometimes kills me, but you have to be relevant as much as, you know, I would prefer to live a life incognito and kind of do my own thing. But it's very important to kind of keep people up to date with your gigs or your production or your movement. I think it is definitely a black hole that I can fall into. I mean, I can find myself doom scrolling for hours and going like, oh my gosh, okay, what was it even starting to do? So I think it can be a cure and a curse and a blessing. Depends on how you use it. You've just got to kind of manage your time and you are not given to the endless cat reels that I find myself scrolling through.
Cat reels. Yeah, I sometimes find myself with the dogs and the animals. But then I'm like, stop. What was I doing? I needed to post that.
I know. But I think it's very useful if you use it correctly. But don't become all consumed by it.
Exactly.
Also, it's a non-reality. I mean, people are not going to post when they're having a terrible day on Instagram. So it gives people this false sense of this person has an amazing life. No, it's not like that, you know. So got to kind of look at it with, take it with a pinch of salt.
You said you prep differently, I know, for events and that, and for festivals. Is there a process each time that you go through to choose what you're going to play? Like sort of an overview, or is it just diving into a rabbit hole and going from there?
I try to stick to the system. I mean, I've got my records kind of in semi categories of house, techno, disco, whatever it is, kind of semi organized. But other than that, there's like complete zero organization skills from my part. I lack the ability to have a system. So my system is no system, I think. And then I like spiral into the rabbit hole of playing B-sides and trying to discover new music. I'm like, oh wow, that's an incredible vinyl that I have from the 90s. But I turn it over and it has this great acid remix, you know? So no, there's no system, but I'm trying to be better. This is my New Year's resolution, is to kind of focus. ADHD bless
So
myself.
what's next? We know you're going to be at Calabash for the audience, listening audience. We're recording this at the end of January. Calabash is the beginning of February. Abby's going to be there. What section is it? It's the sort of a DJ section, or what?
Yeah, so they've created a second stage that's kind of more of an electronic stage. So
Okay.
they've got the main band performing in the stadium, and then I think there's a secondary stage. I'll be there. And then I'm playing at Physique Festival, which is kind of another boutique festival in Cape Town, which is great. All sorts for a whole weekend of sliding around in the mud, which is my favorite.
Okay.
And then I'm playing at another festival thereafter called Retreat Yourself, which is kind of like a combination of holistic activities in the day and music at night. It's quite
Okay.
cool. And yeah, my brain is mush, but lots coming up. They posted to my socials.
So on average a week, how many gigs in inverted commas, including festivals and events, do you have?
It ranges from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to maybe just Thursday, Friday or just Friday, Saturday. I used to play as many gigs as I humanly could on a day, but I burnt out and it was just impossible, especially, I mean, logistically with my heavy vinyl bags. And I've
Yes.
tried to play fewer gigs, be more discerning at which gigs I play at, and yeah, not tie myself out. Otherwise there's no point, because I do everything, get sick, and then can't play my future gigs. So
Exactly.
yeah. So
Okay, cool.
I'm trying to do a more measured measured approach.
Body health, mind, wellness. There
Exactly. I mean, I still made it to gym at 7 o'clock this morning, so
we go.
yeah.
So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Keep the vinyl movement alive, not dead, revived, and yeah, support cause, I suppose. Buy music on vinyl, start a collection, start something that's uniquely yours.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.